Van's little okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
In the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, that's good.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WDND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WDND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
We're on a road to nowhere, so come on inside and take that ride with us. This is the Red Zone on WZND. I'm Leo Stauder. I'm the sports director and host of this fine program.
Yeah, you are.
I'm joined by my crew. The player formerly known as Joey Dwyer, my assistant sports director, is here with us.
I gotta ask, was that a Hotel California reference at the very beginning?
No, that was Road to Nowhere by the Talking Heads.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm with you now.
What am I?
Our producer is Joe Kennedy, and danger is his business.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a great show for you guys tonight. We are keeping it a basketball-heavy show because it is March. The madness is on midway through March, and this is finally picking up. We're going to be joined later on in the show by our former sports director, Andy Olson, to talk about some Illinois men's basketball. Marcel Francis from the News and Sports Department is going to join us a little bit later. He's going to be talking about some soccer, but he's going to be sticking around to talk about some even more March madness with us later. But so let's start off with a little bit of some ISU basketball here, because we have some news regarding the Illinois State women's basketball team. Joe, you want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, so the women's basketball team will be taking place in the Women's National Invitational Tournament, or the NIT, and they're going to be going up against, they're going to be going up against Tulane here coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, but let's first start off talking about how last weekend against Loyola, we thought that this Redbird team would easily be able to go on to at least Saturday, but they kind of ended in a heartbreaking loss.
Well, let's take it back there, Joe, because I don't think the road to Saturday was as easy, because we talked about it before that facing Loyola for the third time in 7 days was a tough matchup.
Yeah, that's impossible. It's hard
to do. And you saw in that game just how back and forth it was. I think there was something like 12 lead changes. Neither team really was able to take the lead for much point of the game. It was just two evenly matched teams, and there was a solid back and forth in that game. So I think it was just a tough one. The Redbirds didn't really lose that game. They just got beat. Like, it was a tough match against an opponent they had seen a lot of, and the Ramblers came out to play. We definitely saw that.
I might have to disagree with you there, Leo, when you said that the Redbirds didn't lose the game.
Uh-oh.
Because if you look at...
They had their chance.
You look at every player on the roster not named Juju Redmond, it was kind of an off night. Juju shot 90% from the field. She willed that team. She had 23 points. Only Paige Saylor had even double digits aside from Juju. And Redmond really willed this team to be even close in this game. And then for Paige Saylor to get called on that travel on the last possession of the game was just absolutely brutal. It's a tie game. They have the last possession. There's no shot clock. You have to be the team that takes the last shot. You cannot have an error like that. That is just absolutely brutal.
And she had that ticky-tack foul, too, on the defensive end, where the two-time defensive player, or all-defensive team defensive player of the year, she was doing everything, but then all of a sudden she had that little ticky-tack foul right there that got Allison Day of the Ramblers. It was Allison Day and Juju Redmond combined. They shot the ball 20 of 24 from the field. They shot it. Those two basically were going throughout the whole game, but they had the chance to win. But let's take a look now at this week's coming game, I would say, because they got a chance to go up against Tulane, a great team, and there's also a lot of presence of the Valley in this national or NIT tournament as well.
Yeah, and taking a look at that, I think that that originally came as a surprise when I saw they got the bid, but then when you see how much representation the Valley got in that, I think it does make sense, because you look at the standings, really, after you got past Missouri State and Drake in the Valley standings, that it was so even in that, and the Redbirds were just shy of Drake, too, so it was, the Valley was very well matched this year, and I think it is fair that a lot of teams get that chance now to continue their season. I think, it, what you said, six teams that between the NCAA tourney and the NIT are going to get a chance to continue this year.
And Tulane coming into the game, they're at a 17-8 mark right now, and they made a trip to the semifinals of the American Athletic Conference tournament last week, and they got a couple of good players with their point guard in Jerkeela Jordan. She was named the AAC, Freshman of the Year last week, and she started in every single game for the Waves, and she's averaging 16.6 points per game. So we're going to see a great matchup between Jordan and Juju Redmond, two great, outstanding point guards.
And I think this is
not even point guards, but yeah.
And I'm sure it's going to be really nice for them to see a team that is not Loyola Chicago, because that's all they've been exposed to for the last 3 or 4 weeks. So it'll be nice to see how they can rebound after a loss that was as backbreaking as the one at Hoops, because we had talked about it on the show, and a lot of people were talking about how they came into that tournament, they had kind of felt slighted after last year, because they had a very good team last year. They were looking to make a lot of noise in the conference final and just couldn't get it done. Like, we were talking about preparations if we had to go to the NCAA women's basketball tournament, because they were really looking that good. So I am really excited to see how they bounce back, especially, you know, Mary Crompton, who was one of the best shooters in the NCAA this season and just had an off night, and Paige Saylor, who's one of the smartest players on this team, who had just an off night. So that's probably a lot of fatigue and playing against the same team. So getting a change of scenery, getting to play a new team, I think they're going to rebound and respond very well.
And you talk about from a program building standpoint, I think we were expecting to see them take that next leap in the Valley tournament this year, but they unfortunately weren't able to. But they could still put the program on the map with a game like this, or a chance like this. This is the first postseason appearance in Coach Gillespie's tenure here. It's the first time they've played in the postseason since the 12-13 season. So Redbird basketball is continuing to make the name for themselves at the national level. Maybe not in the way they had hoped to, but now they can have a chance, beat a team like Tulane and put themselves on the map even more.
Yeah, and Tulane is a great program. Their head coach, Lisa Stockton, she's in her 27th season for the Green Waves and having over 530 wins, which is 19th among all-time active right now. So you're taking a look at Coach Gillespie. She's trying to build something that like that right now, trying to get this win, try to advance this team. Even though it might just be the NIT, it could also be a better thing, because in the NCAA tournament, you're going to be facing tougher teams. But in the NIT, they're one of the top and better teams in that, and they have a chance to possibly get to the semis or even the finals, but they just got to take one game at a time, though.
And looking at a different team sorry for the transition, boys. Looking at a team that is making
it was going so well.
Is making
it really was.
A lot of the wrong moves.
It's not their fault, but the
absolute exodus that we are seeing from the men's basketball team right now, with players entering the transfer portal, does not bode well for a team that we thought we were, like, convincing ourselves. We're like, hey, maybe we're going to be really good next year because we got all these super young players. Maybe they'll all develop. But guess what? They're all leaving.
Yeah, and so let's...
Not all, but some valuable players.
Have had four players enter the transfer portal, including Keith Fisher, who was going to be one of the lone seniors on the team, Dedrick Boyd, Abdu Jai. Those are the three primary players. All three of them, when they were healthy or when they were eligible, were players that played. And the one that probably hurts the most for me is Jai, because that was a player that showed a lot of promise his freshman year and was working his way in. I almost say, Joe, we talked about this off-air, that he mirrored the trajectory of Ray Adowu, how when they were both freshmen, they played a lot, worked their way into the starting lineup, but then sophomore year didn't make that jump to stay in the starting lineup and work their way into bench players then. So does that come on a developmental thing, or is it mean better players in the lineup have pushed them out? Because this is 2 years in a row we've seen it happen with players at the same position.
Yeah, I think it's developmental, because you saw Ray Adowu go to Tulsa, and Tulsa at one point last year and into this year, they were a ranked team, and Ray Adowu wasn't getting the minutes exactly a lot this year for them, but he also was getting, most importantly, he was developing, and you could tell by the body type and body frame he has that he could develop into a great player. And same with Abdu Jai. Abdu Jai, he's tall, he's very lengthy, and he's one of the best rim protectors in the Missouri Valley. Him and Dusan Mihorcic finished top five in blocks in the Valley. So it might not be a top five conference or a power five conference, but I think he could be a great addition to a team that is in need of length, especially right now.
And Andrew showed too that he was a sneaky good shooter from beyond the arc too. So that's why I thought he was a valuable player for this team moving forward. But it feels like they just couldn't get him to take that next step, whether that's on him or on the coaching. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure, but that's I think the loss of the four players they lost that hurts the most.
And that's absolutely brutal because he was going to be one of those guys who was going to have a more substantial role. He was already basically like the sixth man coming out in replacement of Dusan Mihorčić when, you know, Mihorčić would get three fouls in the first half and have to come out. But like you said, Joe, he was a pretty good perimeter shooter, and so he's going to be kind of a steal for a school. You've got this 6'10 guy who is mobile. He is great on the defensive boards, and he can shoot. That really hurts for ISU. And then another player is Dedrick Boyd, who is another guy who spent some time in the starting lineup, some time coming off the bench. He kind of got phased out a little bit with the addition of Josiah Strong, but he was still a very good guard for this team. He was definitely the third in the line of succession, I guess. And so for the Birds to lose him as well, that only makes the role that Antonio Reeves plays way more important.
And you look at that, he was going to be one of the only seniors on the team next year, him and Fisher. So
both gone.
And so he just provided some veteran experience. He could score in bunches. Like, how valuable, we're talking about in the March Madness and stuff, how valuable those teams that can have upperclassmen cut off the bench that can score. This team's not going to have that next year. Like, it's going to be the same thing next year where, okay, maybe instead of being reliant on juniors, or on sophomores, they're going to be reliant on juniors. Like, they're still going to be a younger team and lack that experience.
And before we wrap it up, because we got to send it to break soon, but why do you guys think that all these players are leaving? It boggles my mind that we've been talking about it, right? It seems as though this team has a lot of promise. Even though we were last in the Valley, there were games. The game against Bradley, Joe, that we did, they looked good. And when they put it together, they all looked really good. So I don't know why, on a surface level, why you'd want to leave that for something unknown where, yeah, you could go to a bigger school, but you'd get less minutes, you know? And so I don't really understand, and obviously I'm not in the locker room, but I don't understand why all these players are getting out of Dodge.
I mean, maybe for both of them, you look at it, you see that there are newer players to the team that all of a sudden were being thrust into the roles that they previously occupied. Because we've seen, as the year went on, Howard Fleming and Amon Washington both started increasing their playing time, that maybe, I don't know how their recruiting class is this year, but maybe there were some other players that they thought maybe would gel better with what the mix had. If you look at Abdu's role, where Mihorčić and Hirona Sissoko were playing a lot more than him. So I think it was some of the newer additions to the team kind of made their roles diminish.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much just what you said. I think they wanted more playing time. I think they wanted the opportunity to start more games, especially with Dusan Mihorčić. He definitely got a little bit more time than Abdu Jai. And Dusan's definitely more physical, and I think that's what Dan Muller was definitely looking at more. And I think it has to come down to the coaching staff, too. Like, maybe they just don't like playing for it. We don't know, and even the players or coaches, they won't tell us. They won't tell us what's going on inside. They don't want us to know that, I guess.
And
they
it's no secret that we are a pro Dusan Mihorčić podcast.
Yeah,
he is our favorite player on the ISU men's basketball team, without question. But he showed that he had a lot of fatigue this year, which is something that he's going to have to work on the off season. But that was somewhere where Abdu Jai was so important to come in and get those minutes late in the first half, in the middle of the second half, where we needed somebody who could still protect the rim and still grab the boards while we were protecting a lead or trying to stay in a game. And so that is what I think is really going to hurt.
So I opened the show by talking about a team that's on the road to nowhere. It looks like we might be talking about another one in that same direction. But we're going to have to wait until next fall, at least, to hear about that. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Marcel Francis is going to join the show, and we're going to talk about some Redbird soccer. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
from March Madness to Marcel Madness.
Ooh.
We're on the red zone here. We're now joined by our news and sports guest, Marcel Francis, the man who knows everybody on this campus and is half of the tandem of the ESPN Redbird Soccer Broadcasting Crew. So that's what we're here to talk to him about, is some Redbird Soccer, because they've had an interesting past few games. Marcel, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Well, thanks for having me first. It's great to be here. Great to be with you guys. So, yeah, let's talk about some soccer here. So, Redbird Soccer, currently 2-2 overall in the MVC standings, third overall behind, I believe, Indiana State and Loyola. They have a really promising team this season with a lot of depth, and they came in second in the preseason poll, and they're being led by Ashley Santos and Adley Basler, also Lister Ramsden as well on the defensive line, all MVC preseason team. But lately, last couple of games, they had a little bit of a skid when it came to scoring goals, which we didn't think would be too much of a problem this year, especially because Ashley Santos and Abby Basler, they've played so well in the midfield. But up top, it looks like there's a little bit of inconsistencies, which could possibly be a problem. And in Indiana State, they had a lot of chances as well where they could have finished off the game because they dominated. Joey, when we were doing the broadcast, 75 minutes of the game, they absolutely dominated, really.
And that's one of the biggest things I wanted to talk about, bringing you on to talk about Illinois State soccer, because we've been talking about this for weeks.
Yeah.
Doing these calls, and it's been mind-boggling how much the offense relies on Abby Basler and Ashley Santos to facilitate, and even when they do that effectively, because we saw against Indiana State, they were really spreading the middle of the field out, they were getting really nice through balls, but then they got it up to Allison Baker, and she could not finish, and not to just pick on her, but like, there were a lot of different opportunities for the Redbirds to score, and they just could not put the ball in the back of the net, and it was absolutely brutal. And Leo, you were there covering it for TV, and you said like the atmosphere like of the team completely changed when they would miss a wide open shot.
Yeah, it was one of those weird things because they got 17 shots. They outshot the team 17-5, but then lost the game. Yeah. So that comes down to a thing: was it they got the quality of shots they probably wanted, but maybe they weren't getting the quantity of shots, where sometimes not all shots are good shots.
So, yeah, you guys were talking about Abby Basler and Ashley Santos. So what are some players on the team that you think are going to have to step up here down the stretch to help improve their offensive stride? You're saying a couple about one other player, but they weren't making their shots. So who's some maybe younger players or even experienced players?
I mean, Marcel, let me know if you agree, but I really think it's got to be the forwards. And it's not like they've been bad. Like, the forwards played very, very well. Like, Sarah Lafayette in particular had a really nice game against Indiana State. She had a lot of good opportunities. It's just the shots need to go in. It's not on one certain player, because as a whole, the team looks pretty solid. They have a lot of players contributing. Ashley Bacatus is one of our favorites to watch, just because she's a defender who can really stretch the outside wing, but it's not even a one player situation.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like they're going to need goals from multiple people up top this year. And especially now with Kate Dalfava, who was scoring all the goals, 15 goals last year for the Redbirds, but now she's in the pros. So I think definitely junior forward Riley O'Brien, she's definitely going to have to step up. She had a really good game actually as well against Indiana State. She plays really well in the right wing and got like a few crosses in that definitely created chances for some players up top. As well, you said Lafayette, she's really good as well. But I also think Allison Baker, too. I think she's going to keep on getting playing time. We did the game against Missouri State where she came onto the field late, scored a goal, and she did an excellent job. So I think there are a few players that are going to have to contribute.
And Allison Baker has been the best player on this team when it comes to manufacturing scoring opportunities for herself. So she's just got to be able to really convert on those. And that's the big thing, because like you said, 75 out of the 90 minutes of this Indiana State game, they were dominant. Indiana State had no room to breathe, but then all of a sudden they gave up one quick goal on a set piece, and it's over.
So this is something I noticed in the Indiana State game, and I think momentum is one of those things that us media types blow out of proportion. We use it when we don't have much to talk about. But you talk about the momentum of that Indiana State game, where the Redbirds had it on the Sycamore side of the field most of the game, and I think it was a 15-minute span where they hit a post and then missed two back-to-back corner kicks. I feel like when you don't convert on chances like that, you kind of get inside your own head. And in a game like soccer, there is, I think momentum does apply to that a lot more because there is that build-up. And it's like a chess match where you're setting up moves maybe three pieces down the road. And so when you don't get to convert on chances like that, that's where the game's won or lost right there.
So I haven't been able to watch the games here this year, but by the way you guys have been talking, Marcel, it seems like they just haven't been able to convert in the final third. It's like they've gotten their opportunities, they're getting their shots, it's just they're not just able to execute on them, right?
Yeah, look, it's just like the final shot, final piece. They are a great team in possession. Joey and I, definitely, we've said that throughout the time we've been doing the broadcast this year. They're great in the back line, and Ashley Santos and Amy Bassler, they distribute in the midfield very well. It's just that last piece for that finally completes the move that they've been falling at. And I definitely think the missing senior forward, Natalie Von Lo, I think that's probably been a factor as well. She contributed a lot to the team last year as well before she got injured in her, but I definitely think she'll be back as well soon. But, yeah, we could see a few other players step up. Haley Glover, she's a freshman. She got a little bit of playing time there at the end. A lot of pace. She's really tall as well, has good length. So definitely on set pieces, she could be a threat.
And another player, Catherine Felton, who we saw get into the game against Indiana State, she also had a couple of really nice chances. And this is a team that's really not afraid to score with players who are not at the forward position. We've seen that with Abby Basler and Ashley Santos, who have done all of the scoring for this Illinois State team when it matters. They're able to push up, and that's the big thing for them is going to be converting in the offensive third, and then set-piece defense is something that has been absolutely killing this ISU soccer team because that's how they gave up the first goal against Indiana State. And shout out to CeCe Wahlberg on Indiana State because she's got an absolute ripper of a shot.
Yes, she does.
You're talking about the defense. Is that so? How's her defense then, I would say? Is her defense looking great? And then you're just talking about the set pieces is really the only thing they got to work on?
The actual defenders are very stout, especially Alyssa Ramsden.
Yeah, give me some players.
Alyssa Ramsden, and I already talked about Ashley Bacatus, who plays on the outside, but Alyssa Ramsden in the middle is unbeatable one-on-one.
Really
you are not going to be able to outrun her. You're not going to be able to outpower her. It is just, she is so fun to watch, and that's what makes them so good, especially in that possession game, is she's so hard to get past. She'll always take the ball from you, and that's why ISU gets beat on these set pieces so much, because they continually, like, when you give up the set piece, you don't give your defense any room to breathe and do what they're good at.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of been the main thing as well, especially giving up those fouls along the edge of the box as well in the danger area. We talked about that as a key to the game, Joey, and sure enough, it was, I believe, the 86th minute, Anna Holcomb-B for the Sycamores put one bottom right corner right outside the box. And yeah, they made them pay for their mistakes as well. But definitely the defense, they're really solid. Just had a couple hiccups, but they'll definitely pick it back up. And another player as well, Ariana Lombardi, the freshman who started, I believe, at right back for the Redbirds. She had a great game and slotted in there and played really well. So.
And Coach Sylvie's been moving her around a lot because she's came into the season listed as a midfielder, so she's been bumped up and down. And that's a lot of what this team is players who can play at various different positions and be very successful. And so they really just need to be able to put it together because this is a very good team. I cannot stress that enough. Very good team. They just need to figure out how to put it in the back of the net.
Definitely.
So you're talking about how great a team this is. So it's a pretty accelerated schedule they have where it feels like the season was just getting started and now they have four games left. So heading into the final segment of their season, where do you see their ceiling being?
In my opinion, for the ISU, I believe they should be reaching the tournament finals.
Okay.
I think that's the standard as well. It will probably be against Loyola, first in conference right now, currently undefeated on the season, and also they're playing them next Saturday, and I believe that's away as well. So that'll be a big test for them, arguably their biggest of the season. So, but this team coming in second in preseason poll, they should really be making a run deep into the playoffs.
And we've seen them go up against some very good Missouri Valley Conference opponents in Indiana State and Missouri State and be pretty successful. So I think there are just a couple pieces that Coach Sylvie needs to figure out, and then they're going to be one of the best teams in the conference for sure.
in looking at the team for ISU, I see right now that they have two people from Naperville, one each from Marcellus High School, one from my high school.
Yes.
So I got to ask how they're doing. We got Shayna Dudez from Naperville North, and then Hannah Bradley-Leon, who's only played in two games this year. I don't know if you've guys seen her, possibly, maybe, maybe not. But Shayna Dudez, she's been in there for six games. Is she a midfield?
Shayna Dudez, she definitely, I think, listed as a midfield, but I believe when she came against Indiana State, though, she actually played up top.
Yeah, she's another one of those players.
So they got
switches.
Some versatile
Wait,
players,
okay, so is Naperville North, is that you, Joe?
That's Marcel.
No. Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay, so you have Hannah Bradley-Leon.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. She's a freshman. She's shown promise when she's gotten in.
Yeah.
It's just a pretty stacked lineup, so she hasn't gotten a whole lot of playing time. Shayna Dudez, though, she is legit coming off the bench.
Yeah. Definitely, and that's another player to look out for as well, too, could possibly like get that starting role up top, because I think what they are missing now is really like to out-and-out goal scorer who can get you a goal like every two games. But yeah, there's some couple promising players there from Naperville that we should be looking at.
Get to in, all right, yes, that's sir. Good, that's good.
So Naperville North gave us Shannon Dudas, Sarah Kushner, and Marcel Francis. What a
trio. That's the best trio you could possibly
get. Honestly, get those three playing any sport together, and they would beat any other team you could put out there. I swear to God.
And tight end, Illinois State's tight end, Mitch Lewis.
Oh.
He's not playing this season, but he's playing in the fall. He's hurt
right
now. So there's a lot of Naperville North, a lot of Central guys, too. But.
And we're very grateful for the ones from North, some of the ones from Central, okay, but mostly we like Marcel.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep Marcel around. We like him so much.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Andy Olson on to talk about some Illini basketball. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Stoddher with Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy. For our next guest, we'll be joined by our former sports director, former Red Zone host, and current WCIA multimedia journalist, Andy Olson, making his return to The Red Zone. He's here to talk about some Illinois basketball with us because they have a pretty exciting tournament schedule coming up. So let's dive right into this, Andy. How exciting has it been to cover this team this season?
Leo, there's so many ways that I can go about answering that question first. And well, first of all, thank you guys for having me back. It feels good to see what you've done with the place. It's awesome. But this season, I think everyone knew going in that on paper, this team could be really special. You have Io DeSumo returning, Kofi Coburn deciding to come back as well. Two guys that at the during the middle of last season, you kind of expected to move on and start their NBA careers. And the fact that they were able to bring that team back, and part of that reason is because they didn't get the chance to play in the postseason last year. Everything got canceled. They were on a hot streak, if you guys remember. They were the number four seed going into the Big Ten tournament last year, and then just didn't get a chance to see what would happen. So the mantra of this season was unfinished business. That's what Io DeSumo keeps calling it. And you can tell that these guys have a chip on their shoulder because of that. You add a couple of top 50 prospects in Adam Miller and Andre Corbello, and they've really adapted well into the team. They had some freshman growing pains early, like you do with everyone, but they've really found their footing, and this team is peaking at a really good time, winning 13 of 14. Only loss in that stretch was at Michigan State, where Io DeSumo, who is known for closing out games, was concussed for the last 3 to 4 minutes. So this team is looking really good. It's been so exciting going to the games, and it's something that I don't take lightly, that I get the chance to actually see this team in person. It's really weird seeing the State Farm Center empty. I haven't been to a game when State Farm Center is full. My first game was when it was this season. So I definitely do not take it for granted. The fact that I get to see this team, because I know there's so many Illini fans out there that wish they could be there. So it's been very exciting, and I'm excited to see where this team goes, because as you guys know, when you have a fun team to cover, it's always fun to be a journalist.
And so you mentioned that how hot the Illini were in the last stretch of the season. You said 13 or 14. They absolutely dominated the Big Ten tournament. What was the influence that kind of turned the season around from they had that early loss to Baylor, which was kind of tough, and some other things that went wrong, but they really turned it around. I guess they were always good, you know? But
oh, absolutely.
But they really picked it up. So what was the change in mentality there?
I think part of it was those freshmen growing into their roles. Adam Miller has been a starter all year, but he has never in his life been a guy that's had to worry about defense. He's come up through the high school ranks and the AAU ranks just being the best scorer. And he had to find his own role in this team. Andre Curbelo had to find his role coming off the bench. And being able to learn from those losses, I think, has been huge for this team. If this team was undefeated going into the NCAA tournament, I would not be as probably high on them as I am right now, just because they've had to go through those experiences. You mentioned Baylor. You know, they got exposed. They hung with them for about 25 to 30 minutes before Baylor went on a run, and Illinois was just never able to get back into it. So Brad Underwood, the head coach for the team, has talked all this season about learning from those experiences. And there have been a couple of times this season where they haven't played to their full potential, almost playing down to their opponent. I think, you know, specifically about the loss at home to Maryland, which Maryland ended up making the tournament at a time that was a pretty bad loss. I believe everyone that Illinois lost to this season is in the NCAA tournament, but you'll have to check me on that. That's just off the top of my head. They only have six losses. But, Joey, to answer your question, I think it was those growing pains into these guys' own roles. Jacob Grandison, a guy who had to sit out last season, finding his way into the starting lineup, has been super important for them, having that kind of stretch four that can be on the floor with the three other guards and Kofi. So I think it has been about learning from those losses, getting sound defensively. They've been good all year defensively, but they've really found themselves at the very end. And I think that has a lot to do with them being able to play defense at a really high level and those freshmen really contributing more than they were at the beginning of the year.
Do you think any of it has to do maybe even with Io getting out and being injured? Because I feel like that gave the opportunity for Miller and Curbelo to step up, and especially after that Michigan State game, it seems like they've been on a roll with or without Io. Do you think that benefited the Illini, even with Io breaking his nose, putting on the Batman mask? Do you think it helps him?
Absolutely, 100%, Joe. When Io went out, you looked at that end of the season stretch. So he missed Nebraska at home, which was not a super important game, but it was senior night, and he was honored as a junior because everyone knows he's leaving after this season. Then it was at Wisconsin, who was ranked at the time, and then at Michigan, who was only had one loss in the Big Ten at the time. So everyone looked at Io going out at that point as a death sentence for the Illini, that, okay, hopefully they can still make it to Friday because only the top four seeds make it there. And, I mean, it looked like three losses to end the year, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio – or, excuse me, Michigan. Who'd I miss there? I missed one. Nebraska. I got it. So the way that they were, like you mentioned, Joe, the way that they were able to step up into those roles is so much more important in this postseason play now, because there were points early in the year where Io just had to be that closer and be that guy to win the game for the team. He had so many of those winning moments where he just had to put the team on his back. When they had those games where they didn't have him, I think they learned so much about themselves as a team that's going to benefit them in the NCAA tournament. I think that showed in the Big Ten tournament final against Ohio State, where the Buckeyes came back from down 17 and forced overtime. It wasn't just up to Iowa in that game to keep Illinois going. You had your DeMonte Williams hitting big threes, Trent Frazier playing lockdown defense. That's all comes from having to play without Io for those few games. And that's, I think, where you can really learn a lot about yourself as a team, that if you can still win without, I would say, because I saw him playing personal year, I would call him the player of the year in college basketball. If you can still win without that guy, you're a pretty damn good team. And they showed a lot in that stretch. And I think that, like you mentioned, can only benefit them moving forward in the postseason.
So now moving into the postseason, what would you say, now that this team's kind of found their identity, what is the X factor they have that maybe no other team in the nation has that could propel them on a run this postseason?
We've been talking about it a lot, and it really just comes down to Io DeSumo. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen the compilations of all the times that he's closed out a game. He is the closer in college basketball. I am jaded by my Chicago sports fandom that when the team is down and out or things are getting close, you're like, okay, my team's going to lose. And covering Illinois, I get that same feeling from watching my own teams. Like, there's no way Io can pull this out again. Something's going to go wrong. But every single time, the final 2 minutes, Ayo Dosunmu finds a way to win, and he calls that the Mamba mentality. Kobe Bryant was his favorite player growing up, and you can see that in the mentality that he brings to this team. That, I think, is going to be the key difference for Illinois. He is the X factor. He is the player of the year, and I know Luka Garza is most likely going to win. Terrific player. Love Luka Garza. He's very, very good, but Ayo Dosunmu and his ability to close out games, that's what you need in the NCAA tournament, a guy on your team who refuses to lose, and that's exactly what Ayo is. So that's why I think the people should be watching out for the Illini in the next month.
So going into March Madness right now, they have their matchup against Drexel in the first game. So hopefully that's an easy win. But moving forward, they've got some teams who are really good. Like you mentioned, Iowa is in there, Missouri, who defeated them earlier in the season. And then Georgetown, who came in as a 12 but had an awesome run in the Big East tournament. Are there some matchups that – as an Illini supporter as well as a reporter, that you're a little concerned about?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you bring up the Illini supporter because I grew up as an Illinois fan. Of course, went to Illinois State because I fell in love with the broadcast program there. So the Illini supporter has, like, it's fallen off a bit, but I can still feel that, and I can sympathize with, you know, Illini Nation when I watch these games, which I think, you know, helps me in my reporting because I know what they're going through a little bit. So I was saying in the Big Ten tournament when I was over there in Indy that there were a couple of teams that I did not want to see in Illinois' part of the bracket just because I knew how good they were. Those teams were Loyola, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. All three of them are in Illinois' part of the bracket. First of all, I mean, Loyola as an 8 seed is just so bad. I don't know what the tournament committee was thinking there. Loyola is at least a 5 or a 6, in my opinion. They are really good. Cameron Crutwig, who was a third-team All-American this year, to get them in the round of 32 stinks. It stinks for me as a fan of the MVC, because I want to see Loyola make a deep run, but I don't think that they'll beat Illinois. Illinois will definitely be challenged there, and that's what you're going to want to get, you know, as you get to the Final Four and things like that. But Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State are on such a bender right now. They are so, so good at the moment. And then Bob Huggins, who Brad Underwood used to coach under, you could possibly get in the Elite Eight. There are so many interesting storylines and matchups, and not to mention Oklahoma State. Brad Underwood coached there for a year before leaving for Illinois. So the fans in Stillwater, not very big fans of Underwood, and I imagine that still holds true to this moment. So there are some teams there that can definitely give them some tough matchups, but when it comes down to it, the only two teams that I think can win the national championship this year are Illinois and Gonzaga. I don't think anyone really comes close to where they are at the moment.
So I was going to
agree with
you. I was going to ask you your Final Four prediction, but it sounds like you already gave us two in Illinois and Gonzaga. So who else do you see getting into the Final Four and winning the chip?
So if we'll go to the East, which is where Michigan is the number one. I think Isaiah Livers being out for the Wolverines is going to be very bad for them. They have really relied on Livers a lot this year, and I think they're susceptible to being the first number one seed knocked out of the tournament. I'm not saying that it could be in the round of 32. I have predicted it in the round of 32. I think the Bonnies could get it done. But coming out of the East, I have Alabama. I really like what they're doing down there. I mean, they've really become the kings of the SEC this year. And I think that has a lot to do with experience versus those usual blue bloods relying on first-year talent. When you have so much experience coming back because of the pandemic, you're going to be much better than those kids coming out of high school, which isn't normally the case in college basketball. I think the Blue Bloods come back next year. But for this year, Alabama has just a ton of experience. And then in the South, I mean, I know Baylor has been really good all year, but we've seen them start to slip at the end of the year against Kansas and then again in the Big 12 tournament against Oklahoma State. So I had them getting to the Elite Eight, but I think Ohio State's going to come out of that one. EJ Liddell, who is an Illinois native, is so, so good for the Buckeyes. We saw them go head-to-head with Illinois in the Big Ten final, not going down and out after being down 17. I think Ohio State's really good. So that is my four: Gonzaga, Bama, Ohio State, and Illinois.
And so, Andy, one question I got to ask.
Sure.
Can anyone stop Kofi Coburn? Is it possible? Because I don't think it is. Maybe a foul trouble. That's the only thing.
You know, Joe, at the beginning of the year, I would have said yes, because as I think you guys have heard many times, Illinois fans have heard many times, even just college basketball fans have heard many times, the kid's only been playing basketball for about 4 or 5 years. He only picked it up within the last half decade down in Jamaica before moving to New York where he went to high school. So at the beginning of the year, I thought the way that he moved his feet, the way that he was able to handle the ball was really just raw. And there were points in the year where he was making mistakes. The ball was getting out of his hands. He was making silly turnovers. He wasn't passing out from the post, which was a big issue. I thought that he has a lot to learn. And then we fast forward to the end of the year where he's second in the nation in double doubles, and he has the Big Ten tournament that he does, where he just dominates Iowa, has an incredible second half against Rutgers, and is huge for the Illini and a really team effort against Ohio State. I would say at this point, no, I don't think so. How can you stop a guy who's 7 foot, 285 pounds? I mean, they call him Lil Shaq for a reason. And at this point, I'm going to go with no, Joe. And to have that combo of Io and Kofi, there's not a lot of combos like that out in the country right now.
We thank Andy for being our guest to talk about some Illini hoops. It was great to hear him back on the airwaves here. And coming up next, we're going to talk about some March Madness. So stick around to hear how far we think the Illini can go in this year's tournament. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
We're back. Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and Marcel Francis. We're keeping it on the hardwood here to talk some more March Madness. We are making our brackets. We are all confident that we got them right. We're going to argue with each other over these brackets for a while.
Yes,
and
sir.
Joey has a few prompts for us. So, Joey, you want to take it away here?
I do. Thank you, Leo. Okay, so...
So calm.
Gentlemen, this is madness. It's March. We've got
March,
Drake, yep. Wichita State.
Oh yeah, we got that
in the
on.
Studio right now.
Former Valley team against Drake, who is a Valley team.
Cheering for Wichita State because we don't mess with Drake around these parts.
Ooh.
But I was making my bracket today.
You were,
and I was hoping that you guys could help me out because I've watched more college basketball than I ever have in my entire life this season, and it's only made it harder. Knowing about these teams has only made it more difficult.
It really does, yeah.
So I've got a couple questions for you, and I'm hoping you can answer them.
Mm-hmm.
So first, I want an upset that you guys think is an absolute lock. 100% the higher seed will beat the lower seed. So whoever wants to go ahead, don't be shy.
Well, if you're looking at absolute lock right now, I don't know if I would say it's an absolute lock, but I'm gonna, because I do have them in my Sweet 16, so I'm gonna have to go with the Ohio Bobcats on that.
Ooh,
one, led by
no way.
One of the best stories in the entire NCAA, with Jason Preston, the junior out of Florida, who in high school didn't play at all. He averaged 2 points per game, didn't get any offers from out of high school, and he sent out highlight YouTube videos to the University of Ohio, and they saw it, and now he got it, and he's entered the tournament on fire. He's been noticed, seen as a all NBA type of player, not all NBA type of player, but he's going to make the NBA. And I think if they can get their defense together like they did in their conference championship in the MAC against Buffalo, I think they have a great chance to upset some teams, especially Virginia, because Virginia hasn't played a single practice in over a week now.
And so mine, I guess it's not as major of an upset here, but I'm going with Wisconsin, the 9 seed, over North Carolina, the 8 seed.
Brutal pick. Okay.
I've been impressed.
It's a tough game.
It's a tough game because I feel like, so as Andy
upset,
talked about, it's not a huge upset, but it's an upset.
It's an
so
upset.
I'm going with it.
No.
So Andy was talking about it's been a bad year for the Blue Bloods, and that includes North Carolina. I think the ACC wasn't as good as it normally is this year, and Wisconsin had to play a tough Big Ten schedule, so I think they might be a little bit readier to face the Tar Heels here.
I don't know. I was gonna save my UNC love for a little later, but if you're bringing it out right now, Armando Bacot, he's got 12.5 points a game, huge big man for UNC. They've got Caleb Love running at the perimeter. I'm a big UNC guy,
right,
regardless, but I think the team is super underrated this year, and I think they're putting it together, but yeah, I respect it. I respect the pick.
Wisconsin's just not good, though. And UNC is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the nation. As you were talking about, Armando Bacot and Walker Kessel, 2 7-footers that are huge. Both can, or I don't know about Bacot, he can't really shoot, but Walker Kessler, he can extend the floor. And Wisconsin's just in shambles. But, Marcel, what do you got going on with an upset pick?
Georgetown beats Colorado.
Yes, sir.
12th seed beating the 5th seed. Jeez. I have that game going. And, guys, Georgetown, they're on a roll. In the Big East, they made that miracle run to defeat, I believe it was Creighton in the finals. And I think they're just going to keep on rolling. And Colorado, for me, that's not a bad pick to get in the round of 16. So I think they're going to advance. And I think they're going to win by at least 10.
And Marcel, that was my upset pick too, because we were at your apartment watching the Big East tournament, and Georgetown looked so electric. It was so fun to watch them beat Villanova. Creighton.
They beat Villanova first in the semis or quarterfinals. And then UConn and then Creighton. They had no chance of coming in, going in the tournament at all, but now they're in the tournament as a 12 seed.
Yep.
Absolutely electric. Okay, so our next one. I want a sleeper team. So this is a team that's not going to be top three in their region, so four or higher in their region that you think could make some serious noise. And we'll just go around the table again. So Joe, why don't you start us off?
So I'm going to go right off the bat right now with LSU, who got to the conference championship, and they've gotten double-digit wins for the 3 straight years now, and they're led by Trenton Wofford and Cameron Thomas, Cameron Thomas, who was third in the nation in points. And Trenton Wofford, I was watching him play, and he was doing insanely great. Like he was putting the team. He was the only reason they were in the game against Alabama, and Alabama is a great team who has a chance to possibly make the Final Four. So I think LSU has an opportunity. They got a pretty good matchup with a couple of teams that starts off with St. Bonaventure, then Michigan, who's out without Livers right now, and I think they match up very well with them. And then they go on to play possibly Florida State, but we're not going to get into that much. But I think LSU has an opportunity to make some noise.
I mean, they'll probably go on to play Georgetown, if we're being honest with ourselves. But ever since, we talk about it every week when we're planning the show, but like, Leo, it was like week 3 or something when we had Carter on.
Oh,
Carter
yeah.
Getty from the news and sports staff. And he told us about how Florida State always plays down to the level of their opponent. And from when he said that, it was etched in my mind, and now I cannot pick Florida State.
No, and it made sense, because then we started looking at that trend as it went on that season, where his strategy was kind of working. They played down to their opponents, and I would just not trust them in March. And so for my sleeper pick, this probably would have been better to go with my upset, but I have them going to my Sweet 16. I'm going with Winthrop. This was a team that I discovered during the 3-up, 3-down.
Sweet 16?
Yeah. I got them beating Villanova, and then I got them making it that far, losing to Baylor. They're a team that I just feel very confident in, because I went with them like 3 times, and they did me good then. And they do a good job of it. They can spread the scoring out. They have a few players averaging over 10 points per game. They're solid defensively.
They have an NBA player, yeah.
I think they could be a team that, if they get the right matchups to fall their way, they can make a little noise here.
And they're 23-1. So whenever you see that, that's got to be a team to keep an eye out for when they're 23-1 as a 12 seed.
I wish we weren't doing this segment, because I have my bracket pulled up right now, and there's so many things I want to change.
I know, but you're just going to change your big
game.
So
brutal. This is all right, Marcel, your sleeper?
This is I'm going to go back to Leo's upset. So I have North Carolina. They're definitely a higher seed this year. Obviously, that's not normal for them. Usually, they're a lock to go at least to the round to the Elite Eight, even the Final Four. But just because the way the bracket turned out, I actually think they have a decent chance. I think they'll beat Wisconsin. And against Baylor, who knows with Baylor? I mean, early exit in the Big 12 conference tournament. So they could really find themselves probably, I'd say, against Purdue in that Sweet 16. And from there, who knows? So we'll see.
I've got them in my Elite Eight, beating Purdue and then losing to Arkansas.
Ooh.
So I feel you on that one. All right, so last thing. I want to know, who's the first or second seed who's getting bounced out of this tournament first? One of the big dogs in this tournament, who's going to leave early?
So I have Michigan. And, like, I don't want to – because I feel like everyone's going to be picking Michigan right here, because they've been out without Livers. They've been not doing so hot down the stretch, losing to Michigan State, Illinois, Ohio State. They've been not doing so hot. But I think they have a tough road, like I was saying, with LSU and then possibly either Colorado, Georgetown, or Florida State in the Sweet 16. And then also in the Elite Eight, you're going to have either Alabama or Texas and a couple other schools that could maybe have a chance. But that's definitely the toughest road to the Final Four in the East, and I think it's going to be – Michigan is the first team that's out, but I could also see a team such as Houston as well to go out.
And so for my I got a boring bracket. I got the 1 and 2 seeds making pretty far. Yeah. But my first 2 seed out is Iowa in the Sweet 16. I got them matched up against Kansas. Joey,
that's
I know
just to get under my skin. Yeah. That's just to get under. That was a personal attack.
I just don't
attack,
really believe
Leo.
In the Hawkeyes here.
That was
here.
A personal
think,
attack.
No, I just don't believe in the Iowa Hawkeyes. I think they kind of faltered as the season went on. Their offense started to struggle towards the end. And I think Kansas plays a solid defensive game. So I think Kansas could pull off the upset.
You're lucky Marcel's
it's
between us right
Luke
now.
Luke Garza, who?
Luke Garza. Yeah. Ooh, Marcy.
Right. Marcel's getting it, too. Everybody's getting it after this show. Meet me in the parking lot. Meet me in the parking lot.
For my pick, I personally, I think I have Michigan State's rival, Leo, so I have Ohio State. I have them going out at the round of 16, losing to Arkansas. Mm. So I think after that Big Ten loss to Illinois, I don't think they'll have that momentum that they initially wanted going into the tournament. And I see them winning a couple games. Obviously, they play Oral Roberts first, and then they should get by Virginia Tech in a round of 32 pretty comfortably. But really, when it gets competitive in the tournament, I really don't see them putting up that much of a fight.
I feel you. For me, I'm going with Baylor losing in the round of 32. Wow. We talked about it going up against UNC. I think that's a tough matchup for them. And Baylor has just been, for a team that was consistently top five all year, I just really never felt like they got it all figured out. And this also may be biased because the first game I watched of theirs this season was against Iowa State, where they were coming back off of their COVID break, and they almost lost to Iowa State, who was not good at all this season. So it's just kind of implanted this idea in my mind that Baylor is not all they're cracked up to be. So that's where I have them. But I want to know who you guys have got in the Final Four.
Well, so I have Baylor in my Final Four, and the reason why is because they're one of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation. Defensively, they have All-Americans on the defensive side, and also two All-Americans with Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler, too, as well. And if you just, they're an experienced team. This team together last year was going to be a number one seed, and then they all had everyone come back, too. And I think they're going to – the one thing, though, is they do lack experience with those close and clutch games. As you saw, even in the conference tournament, they lost. But I think it's a risky pick. But I still think they're going to be able to make that Final Four. Along with them, I have Baylor going against Illinois in that side of the right side of the bracket. And then on the left side, I have Gonzaga taking on Alabama. So 3-1 seeds, yeah, it's kind of boring. But those are easily the three best teams I've seen this year, plus Alabama, who's on a hot streak right now and just won the SEC.
Absolute snooze fest from Kennedy right there. With the 3-1 seeds.
Mine's probably not going to wake you much up either. I got Gonzaga over Texas to make it to the championship, and then Illinois beating Ohio State. A rematch of the Big Ten title game, which I think could be a good one. And then I got Illinois over the Zags for the championship. Again, not too exciting, nothing too risky, but I'm playing it safe here. Yeah. And I think if there's going to be a year the 1 seeds make it all the way, this is the year.
Yeah, okay. So first, coming out to West, I have Gonzaga, obviously undefeated on the year, led by Jalen Suggs, future lottery pick. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much that, yeah, it's pretty much a lock. Then I also like you, Joe, I got Baylor making it to the coming out to South. I think they'll be Arkansas in the Elite Eight. I think they'll advance. And also, you know, I have Illinois, Joe, as we've been watching them the entire season, and you'd literally kill me if I didn't have them.
I would. You guys should see me watching some of these games.
It's a scary place to be. For as lovable of a guy Joe Kenny is, he is filled with rage watching his Illini play basketball.
Yeah. It's been a lot of toughness, but yeah.
Yeah, and you're very passionate about it, and I respect that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have them advance, and plus they're just a great team this year.
They're fun.
Now, we're in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. definitely have the momentum going in there, so Illinois. And then coming out the East, guys, I was really unsure how this was all going to play out, so I got Texas.
Okay, I respect that.
Texas has a 3 seed. I have them being Michigan in the Elite Eight to advance. So we'll see.
Like that.
All right, so this is my spiting Joe Kennedy bracket that I have pulled up. So my final four is I obviously have Gonzaga, mm-hmm. And then they're going to be playing Texas. So Marcel, I agree with you right there. I think Texas.
I also had that.
Texas is on Leo. I also agree
so
with you.
So all three of you guys have Texas.
Yeah, I think Texas is going to beat the Zags to move to the national championship.
And then
on the other side of the Final Four, I got Arkansas coming out of the South. They're going to beat UNC to get in that spot. And then in the Midwest, Houston emerges. Only to lose to Arkansas, who's then going to lose to Texas. So I got Texas winning the chip. I got Illinois getting bounced in the Elite Eight.
There's just
for really no other reason other than to make Joe mad.
All right, one thing, though, there's no way that not Gonzaga, Baylor, or Illinois won't be in the national championship.
And I know
you don't have any of those.
I'll remember you said that.
Yeah.
Honestly, we're going to have to make a drop of this at the end of the tournament. We're going to have to play it. Because I think one of you guys is going to be very wrong. And for who knows, all three of us might have just cursed Illinois by saying that they're going to win the championship. So that could have,
there's no cursing in March.
Hey, there's no
curse. All I'm saying is, if they lose to Houston in the Elite Eight, you know who to call.
Yeah. I mean, I could.
That's just about all the time we have tonight. So as much as we'd love to keep this conversation going, we can't. We'd like to thank Andy Olson for coming on the show. Marcel Francis, it was a blast, as always, having you here.
Thank
we
you
might
guys.
Just have to make you a permanent addition, kick Joey out or something.
Wow.
Yo.
Just seeing if you're still listening here. But it was a great show, as always. And the thing, Madness is just going to keep wrapping up because we're going to have women's basketball in the NIT, football versus Western Illinois tomorrow, high school football in Illinois picking up this week. So we're going to hopefully have some audio from some local coaches coming up after that. We're here with you through all the madness. Thank you for listening. This is The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.